Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Forensic Forecast. It's been a long time coming, and we know you've missed us. And likewise, we've missed you. I'm Lee.
And I'm Simon.
Yes, he is. And we'd like to say thank you for joining us. Like we said, it's been a few months. And last thing we had to talk about, well, it wasn't even something that Simon had to talk about. He'd gone and deserted us and gone off to Perfic, or whatever you want to call it.
Perfic on my alleged boondoggle.
Yes. I don't know why it's alleged. But still, there we go.
Yeah, I think you might have a point, actually. Whatever.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't see why we should move on so quickly. why should you waste company resources and go and sit around and do nothing for 2 weeks?
I didn't waste company resources. I took holiday and happened to take part of that holiday as the conference and learn things.
Yes. Mm. All right. Well, how are you doing, Simon?
I'm doing well.
Has much changed between the last time that we heard from you and now?
Well, it's probably been nearly 6 months or something, hasn't it? Maybe not quite that
it's
long.
It's probably been about 2.5 months.
Is it really only been that long?
Yes.
Feels like longer.
Yes, well, that's okay. No surprise. You make everything seem longer.
Let's see. What has changed? I've got myself another EPC.
And that's one you're using at the moment, yes?
Yep. The 901, which I think is quite nice and a nice upgrade from the 701. And I liked it so much that when my work laptop died, I got another EPC for work as well.
So effectively, you have three EPCs.
Well, as far as ownership goes, only one of them's really mine.
It must be nice to have a disposable income.
It is, actually.
Would you like to know what I spent my money on the last few months?
Things that were breaking down?
Things that have needed repair, mostly due to my 2-year-old son. Oh, honestly. Anyway, people aren't here to talk about, or listen to us talk about, such nonsense. So,
maybe we should listeners a very belated Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Yes, and Happy Obama Day for yesterday as well, for those listening from the States.
Yep.
Yeah, I mentioned on Twitter earlier on in the day that my favourite quote from yesterday was something along the lines of God is not happy with the States now. In fact, he considers it an abomination. You're not laughing, Simon.
Well, partly because you already said that to me earlier on in the day. And I can do a fake laugh if you want.
And partly because it's probably not very funny either.
Yeah. If you said it again, so I could do a fake laugh, or we could just move on.
God says that the USA is an abomination. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that. I feel let down. All right, well, I mentioned Twitter. Don't forget that I'm on Twitter, Schizophroid, Schizophroid. R-E-U-D. There you go.
You have to pick the most awkward spelt word or non-word, don't you?
Right. I'm fed up of putting in my name on something and saying, you can have your name 0752598 after it. And I'm like, well, why would I want to do that? I want something original that I don't have to have any stupid numbers after, that I don't have to, you know, that people will think, ah, that's unique. I remember who that is. So I
a bit like my
it.
One.
What's yours?
I signed up for Twitter just this past week. I haven't actually used it yet, but I think I might have got the username EnglishGit.
Ah, yes. Unfortunately, those people listening in the States will not have a clue what the word git means.
No.
It's another word for Simon.
That's unfair.
It's a derogatory term, really, but it's yeah, it's a bit of fun. Yeah. So anyway, yep, don't forget to follow us both on Twitter. First port of call. Second port of call. You may, or likely may not have noticed, that there's been a rather radical update to the Forensic Forecast website. That's www.forensicforecast.com. And on there, you'll notice that it's been having a bit of a change around. It's not at all a subtle change. And there's a few different categories now where we're going to start posting articles. We've got news, we've got technical articles, and we've got methodologies and best practices, plus we've got the good old faithful podcast episodes. And there's currently two articles up there, one written by myself, one written by Simon and my dad. Simon's and my dad? How does that work? I don't know. Anyway, one that our dad wrote was for giving evidence in court, and it's a good read. I recommend anyone to have a little look at that. He works in the construction field, but most of the points he makes are applicable to the digital forensic field. And I wrote something about billing clients. And I've got a few ideas for different things that we can put in, such as technical articles and stuff. I just did a job at work just last few days, which we're doing, dealing with Vista Shadow files. So I'm going to write that up and put that on there. I also imaged a MacBook Air, which I'm also going to sort out as an article and post in there as well. So there's going to be lots more content over the next few weeks, and hopefully that will continue as time goes on. And maybe even Simon will do something useful instead of just sitting there.
Yeah, maybe. You never know.
Yeah, instead of just sitting there not laughing at my jokes. I guess the term joke.
Sorry, was I supposed to fake laugh again there?
No. Very funny. I don't think anyone can tell when you're fake laughing is the problem.
Yeah. Oh, indeed, when I'm fake smiling or really smiling.
Yes. You do that Chandler look of Friends. It's great.
Yeah, it's possibly not quite to that extent, but could be better.
Yeah. All right. So, that's the business taken care of. Oh, yeah. That's one thing I have to point out. I do say a lot. And all I can do is apologise. It's a lot better than when we first started. And I really am trying hard to keep the flow going without interrupting it with or So bear with me if I do mention it 150 or so times per podcast. There was
some... Well, I, for one, am not keeping count.
No. There was somebody posted a comment on episode 10, which was quite amusing, I have to say, and I felt inclined to reply.
Still there for anyone who wants to look at it.
Indeed. And you may agree, you may disagree. I, for one, I'm not bothered. I'm going to keep doing this, whether people enjoy listening to it or not. It's my podcast.
Even if we have two listeners and it's us.
At least it's benefiting someone.
Yeah.
Well, if it's just us, then it won't. But anyway, moving on. We've got a few different pieces of news, recent news that might be interesting to people. The first one is that police in the UK have been given the authority, nay, even they are encouraged to hack into people's computers. Simon, what's going on?
Well, it's a bit of a strange thing, really. It's I don't know. It's quite a U-turn from what you'd expect the police to be doing, of taking a sort of careful approach to things, to saying, "Go ahead, have a go, hack into things, and see if you can present it as evidence or whatever."
Yeah.
It there's ramifications to that, really, and it's difficult to really get very far with just evidence you've gathered from hacking, I think, in a legal case.
Well, there's a few problems with this, isn't there? The police have been told that in certain circumstances it's acceptable to hack into a computer and find out information in that method, yeah? Now, from a forensic point of view, what's the very first thing, if you're a defence counsel, you're going to say if one of your clients has been hacked by the police.
Well, if you could be hacked by the police, you could have been hacked by someone else.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you can go further. You say, well, the police hacked into my computer. They put the evidence there. I didn't put it there. Because where's the protection? Where's the protection to the individual and to the computer? There isn't any. And it's just a bit ridiculous. So, there are, like you said, there are only certain circumstances where that's going to be allowed anyway. What are those circumstances?
Well, we have an act that's been in place since 2000 called the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which allows the surveillance of or surveillance types of things to prevent or detect serious crime, is the phrase that's used. That's pretty much... I'm doing your thing now. I did it again. To prevent or detect serious crime is essentially their handle for being able to use surveillance on people and being able to hack in and that kind of thing.
Yeah. We were talking about this the other day, and I said something along the lines of, well, if you think about it in terms of a house, if, say, somebody stole a car or assaulted somebody in the street and the police were chasing them and they ran into their home, the police don't need a warrant to go into that person's home to arrest them and to seize any potential evidence, such as a weapon or something like that. And you said something which explains why this is not going to really fly, didn't you? What was it you said?
Well, the powers without warrants go so far, or without warrants for specific things, and they usually go as far as things that are in plain view. So things that are hidden away, you usually will not find. Or if you've had to go looking for something to find it, then that's not in plain view, and that's outside of the scope of a warrant traditionally, or not having a warrant even. So without a warrant, it's things that are in plain view. With a warrant, you can turn the house upside down looking for what you want to find.
Yeah. So that's why stuff like hacking into people's computers in order to find evidence or something has really got the people who, like all the civil rights people, all up in arms, really, haven't they? Because what gives the police the right to do this?
What gives the police or the government the right to do a lot of things is something that people might be asking. Because we've had another recent change in law that's going to come into effect quite soon in the UK about everyone's emails. That kind of boggles the mind a bit when you think about it, which is that the government want every internet service provider to keep track of the... I think it's the subject and the header for every email on file.
Yes.
Sent or received. And it's up to the ISPs to keep track of this and supply it to law enforcement if it's asked for.
Yeah. It's quite ridiculous, some of the things. I mean, from the MP's point of view, some of these things probably are like, oh, this is fantastic. This is really going to help in the fight against criminals and stuff like that. But the fact is that they're too far removed from what the problem is, that they don't see it. They have people lobbying to them and stuff like that. But the real people, the people like us and other IT professionals, can look at some of these policies and think, this is ludicrous. This is obviously not going to work. So,
well, we've heard that on a number of occasions, haven't we? Pretty much any law that's come out in the past year or so, the infamous one that we've discussed at great length, probably more times than will probably cause someone to whack their head off a wall if I mention it again, but to do with PI licenses, and all the other things that someone somewhere thought was a good idea, doesn't always work out to make much difference.
No. The thing to remember, though, is that this law hasn't been created so that they can monitor absolutely everybody or hack into everybody's computers. it's there specifically for people who are already, who may already be under surveillance by the police or are suspected of doing something illegal. So, is that, do we have a reason to fear then? I mean, they're going to say strict measures are in place to stop people from doing this to upstanding members of the public, although, or innocent parties. Can we trust them to do that?
Time will tell, I suppose. But generally speaking, there's a lot of powers that police and law enforcement have, and an awful lot of them are never abused, so it's hard to say one would be and one wouldn't be, really.
No. Well, the only reason I say that is because I think of a specific case. The Computer Misuse Act was applied, unfortunately, and failed, when a policeman was looking into buying a car, and rather than going through the proper channels of checking the vehicle and stuff like that, he went onto the police vehicle database and looked up all the details of the car on there, and including details of about the owner and stuff like that. Now, that's an abuse of authority.
Yep.
And we can't guarantee that the same thing isn't going to be done here. You can just imagine some geeky police person sitting there thinking, oh, well, I've got authority to hack away into somebody. Let's see what I can do. Who? Not enough is known about this. No one said enough about this in order for me to feel all warm and snug, knowing that people aren't trying to hack into my network.
Well, they haven't really made any final decisions on this yet, as far as I can tell. And it's essentially an EU guideline that our Home Office think might not be a bad idea. So it's nothing that would apparently affect police behaviour and isn't in any way kind of legally binding yet, but we'll have to wait and see on that.
Yeah. Well, there is one more issue to do with this, which I find a bit puzzling as well, is that you have people all over the world who are constantly sitting at their computer trying to hack into computer systems. Now, I'm not saying that I've got fantastic computer security. I'm not saying that the average person probably can't be hacked. But if you've got firewalls in place, if you're sat behind a NAT router, then this is going to be an extremely difficult thing for the police to do. Where on earth are these people going to go to learn the skills in order to do this? If, you know, they think it's necessary.
I think there's an awful lot of ease in some of the more basic hacking tools now, to the point where some of them are almost kind of point and click. But with that aside, it's still something you need to know what you're doing to be able to do. So there would have to be some kind of proper training on it, and you're just not sure who would really want to even take that up.
But you're right, though. I mean, the point and click stuff, that's fair enough. But that is still, like, the stuff like Metasploit and things like that, they are very, very basic. And if somebody wants to protect their network, they're going to protect the network. And the police, if there are hundreds of Chinese bot writers can't get into these computer systems, I can guarantee you the police aren't going to get in. It's pie in the sky, this. They've got something here which they've suggested is a good idea, and they have no idea how to do it. And what's more, it's potentially a complete breach of privacy, of people's privacy. It's just, I'm going around in circles. It's an idiotic thing to say and to suggest. But once again, someone stupid has got in and said something that's been recommended, and someone's run with it. And regardless of what we say now, it's just going to run. It's just demented. I don't understand.
No, that's how the legal process works, isn't it?
Well. Yeah. So, anyway, we'll move on to our next story.
Yeah, once the police have hacked into your computer and found you doing something illegal, and then go and seize your computers, the thing you want to do is get rid of the evidence.
Simon the Advocate for Criminals Everywhere.
I'm obviously speaking hypothetically.
Yes.
Without any sort of attachment to anything.
No.
No. Oh, well, never mind then.
All right, so, destroying the evidence, Simon.
Yeah, people have gone about the wiping of hard drives for some time, all sorts of different lengths. And software is advertised as being better than other wiping software because it overwrites however many times. There's ideas of how many times you need to overwrite certain things in order for data to actually be deleted. And we've had a study recently performed by Craig Wright, Dave Kleiman, and Shyam Sundar. I've probably completely massacred the names, but never mind.
Let's just say sorry to all those individuals now.
Yep. We have a study by them in which they say that overwriting a sector of a disk once should be sufficient to get rid of anything beyond the point of being able to redeem it.
Yeah, exactly. But we've all seen these stories, we've all heard these stories, and some of us listening may even believe some of these stories, that after a disk has been wiped, that it will get sent off to a data recovery agency and they'll be able to pull massive amounts of data off there. And this study just goes to show that if you wipe it once, the chances of getting anything back are extremely slim. I mean, it's something I've
I think when
felt.
You multiply the different percentages involved, it works out as something like 0.001% or something. As your probability of getting something useful back.
Yeah. Brilliant. So, all these extreme measures taken by people by wiping things hundreds of times, like the Department of Defense and whatever else, are probably, you know, a bit overdone, really.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's a bit of a kick in the teeth for people who produce wiping software as well, because people no longer have to go out and buy wiping software.
Well, I mean, they still have to wipe the software. They still have to wipe the hard drive.
Yeah, they have to have facilities to do it, but as you were saying earlier on, you've actually gone to the point of overwriting, well, certainly free space on a disk by just running a batch script before.
Yeah, that was actually quite amusing because I was leaving a company that I used to work for, and what I did is that I wrote a little batch script in Windows that would just write the same sentence over and over and over again to one gigantic text file. And what I did at the end of that was just delete the text file. And because the file was so big, it was immediately released to unallocated clusters. It didn't even come up as a deleted file in any case. And in an allocated space, all you could see was a sentence written over and over and over and over again. So, yeah. Whether anybody ever saw that, I don't know. But it's quite funny.
But there's all sorts of little tools, free tools, and all sorts of things that will overwrite something once. So all these bits of software that say they'll overwrite something 20 or 30 times, which apparently makes it more secure, they're going to be out of pocket if everyone hears about this.
Well, you say that, but I mean, I use Eraser, for example, yeah? I like Eraser. I think it's a brilliant little program, regardless of what some forensic people say about its use. And you can set that up to do one or however many times. And Derek's Boot and Nuke that will do one or however many times. Killdisk will do one or however many times. And I don't think it really matters, because even though it's only like 0.0001% or whatever it is, chance of getting anything useful back, that is enough, that's a high enough percentage for people like the Department of Defense and Ministry of Defense, or the equivalent in whatever country you're listening from, to continue to do multiple wipes.
Mm-hmm.
And go even further. I mean, I don't know exactly what happens in the Department of Defense over in the States, but we have the Ministry of Defense here, and they go through some ridiculous procedure to protect the data stored on, you know, broken hard drives or out-of-date hard drives, whatever. Like, they wipe it a ridiculous number of times, they degauss the disk, they then grind the disk up into powder, into a fine powder, and then they stick that powder in a drawer somewhere buried in a lab somewhere, never to see the light of day again. Why do they do that? Who knows? I mean, you say it's 0.001% chance of recovering data from a hard drive that's been wiped once. You know.
Yeah, I just made that figure up. What the thing actually says is, it says a single byte of data can be recovered with a 56% probability, but only if the head is positioned precisely 8 times, which in itself has a probability of occurring of only 0.97%. So you kind of multiply them together, you're looking at around about 0.5%, a little under 0.5%,
right.
I think.
All right, that's fair enough.
That's of recovering a single byte.
So you're probably right about recovering anything of any value, though.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the chances of recovering something from powder is zero, and yet they still lock that up somewhere in a little box. And you have to think, well, that's just lunacy, and it's a complete waste of taxpayers' money, but they do it nonetheless because they have been told by somebody there's still a chance that someone could recover data from it, from powder.
Yeah, I don't think that's really very likely, personally. What kind of crazy reconstructive stuff would you have to go through? Well, you'd have to piece together the powder, first of all, wouldn't you? How would you do that?
Well, you can't. That's the whole thing. It's impossible. I don't know. Really?
It's like someone saw Will It Blend online and decided to suggest an idea to MOD on the back of that.
The amount of money it costs to do something like that for each hard drive is obscene. And you just wonder, why bother? I mean, if anyone knows anybody that could reconstruct the hard drive from the fine powder and then recover data from it, please let us know, because we'd love to be proven wrong.
I'm sure you'd have all sorts of job offers from data recovery places as well if you could prove it.
You set up your own.
Yeah.
Stuff job offers. Yeah. But yeah, while we're on the subject of hard drives, actually, there was something interesting which cropped up on the CCE mailing list a little while ago about solid-state drives, saying that the solid-state drives employ certain measures that make it so that they're constantly moving data around inside the area of the drive, and once it's moved this data, it wipes the sectors that it's come from. Brilliant. So that means with the more wide adoption of solid state, or SSDs, whatever you want to call them, that people who recover things from an allocated space, like, I don't know, let's say forensic investigators, are going to see less and less stuff out of an allocated space. Now, some people might say, well, that's terrible. Some people might say, well, that's fantastic. That'll make our job a lot easier. We only have to concentrate on what's there and not on what's not there. And, yeah, valid points to both sides of the argument.
I think I don't think I've had very many cases. I've done quite a number of computer cases. I think it's very rare that something from an allocated clusters has formed a definite meaningful part of an investigation other than a very small part.
But you have to remember, though, you have to remember that things do vary depending on where you are. Like, here in the UK, for example, if you find indecent pictures of children, a.k.a. child porn, in unallocated clusters, I mean, you've got no date and time stamps, you've got no file name, and because of that, you cannot prove usage of that file. You cannot prove possession of that file under UK law. Therefore, those pictures are pretty much discarded in any investigation. You're not going to find that if you go over to the States, where people will be prosecuted based on how many pictures they have. So,
yeah.
Unallocated or otherwise.
Yeah, as you say, it does depend on where you are. I know I've had one investigation where someone had formatted their computer not long before it was seized by the police. And they'd reinstalled Windows on it. So at first glance, it seemed like I wouldn't find anything, but having run a kind of carving for HTML files, was able to find all sorts of things. And this person was had all sorts of evidence on there of sort of online fraud-y type things. And there were had a drive. I probably wouldn't have got that evidence back.
Yeah.
So it obviously does have an implication. But the other thing to bear in mind is so many times, especially on the modern computers, with page files and all sorts of things, the chances are something having existed somewhere and been deleted doesn't mean it's not going to be somewhere else.
No. Well, from my point of view, right, and this might sound lazy to a lot of people, right, if you get in a 1 terabyte hard drive and say all the live files add up to about 5 gig on that hard drive, if you process all the unallocated clusters on that and you come back with all kinds of meaningless nonsense, how much time will you have wasted? I mean, you're talking about, you know, nearly 1,000 gigs worth of data that you have to go through in order to just decide all of a sudden, oh, well, that's all rubbish. I can't include it in my report. And the time spent doing that is going to be astronomical.
Yeah, there's going to come a point where there's a bit of a trade-off for those kind of things.
Yeah. So, anyway, we've probably laboured that point a bit far as well. But, yeah, on to a quite amusing story. If you are going to commission a crime...
We're doing a lot of discussing about crime from a hypothetical point of view tonight, aren't we?
Well.
Well, anyway.
Yeah. Or in particular, if you mow somebody down in your car and then decide you're going to drive away before anybody sees you, then don't use your computer to try and cover up the mess. Brilliant article on Gizmodo earlier this week of a guy who did this exact same thing. He ran somebody over. He killed somebody in this accident, and he drove off, basically a hit and run. And he didn't get very far in terms of time before he was arrested, because what had he done, Simon?
He had decided to go home, go on Google, and search for, over the next couple of days, auto parts, auto dealers out of state, auto glass, Las Vegas auto glass, reporting requirements to law enforcement, auto theft. He'd also searched for hit and run. And so it just seemed, I guess, probably a bit too good to be true for the person who did the investigation to find.
You can just imagine, can't you? You just get that folder put on your desk and say, "All right, this is your job. have a look at this. This guy is suspected of running somebody over and leaving the scene. And then you go through the internet history, you just like thinking, oh yeah, here we go, this is going to be a quick job. This, honestly, I don't... obviously this guy doesn't think, he didn't think of that his computer was going to get seized, that he was going to get found out or anything like that. But
well, it's not the first case like this we've had, is it?
Well, of course not.
Not many people go Googling something after they've committed a crime, but we've had all sorts of occasions where people have Googled something before doing something.
Well, yeah.
Like how to poison your spouse, for example. All sorts of things.
Yeah. I'm not too surprised that a case like this exists, because, like you said, we see them quite a lot. It's quite interesting that it hit the Gizmodo website more than anything else, because it's a popular website, and it just, the more coverage that computer forensics gets, I guess, the better it will be for us. I thought it was very, very cool that Gizmodo decided to report on something that most people have just glossed over as quite insignificant.
Mm.
So, yeah. Good. Good on Gizmodo. We like it. Fantastic. Thumbs up.
Mm.
So, right, well, at this point in time, Simon would have liked to have told us what he learned from PFIC.
Yeah. If anyone who doesn't know what that is, which is probably quite a number of people, it's Parabens Forensic Innovation Conference, which is... that occupied a good chunk of my boondoggle last year. When was it? November?
It was November, yes.
Yeah. See, I forgot already.
I'm glad it was money well spent on you attending the conference then.
You quite remember? Well, I made some quite detailed notes of things that I learned, things that I thought were really quite useful and interesting, and thought I would share them with people the podcast evening, but then realised upon getting home that the orange notebook that I was provided with by Paraben is still in my top drawer at work in my desk. So as the notes are that far away, I can't really make any comment on what happened in the conference because I remember little of it.
Genius.
Yep, that's me.
But thankfully, Simon's going to be redeeming himself because while he was at the conference... he made a couple of good contacts, and what's going to be happening in the future?
Well, I managed to speak to Amber Schroeder, the CEO of Paraben, and to a guy who a number of you may have heard called Johnny Long, who's written a number of books, among which is No Tech Hacking. He has gone around and done various presentations on No Tech Hacking as well. He's also a founder of Hacking for Charities, but he's quite an interesting guy, and it'll be good to get those two people on and see what they have to say and what kind of things they've been up to.
Yep, fantastic. And hopefully, I've been back in touch with Matthew Shannon again. It's been so busy at work, you know. I've wanted to do another podcast episode for months. It can't be more than months, but, you know, 2 months. And I've wanted to test out F-Response. And I've been in touch with Matthew Shannon, and I had a dongle for F-Response, like, sent to me months and months ago, and I just never had the opportunity to use it. So we're going to get, like, a demo license for it. We're going to have a proper look at it, and then we're going to get Matthew on to talk about it. All I can do is say, I'm sorry to Matthew. I've replied. Please read your email. So anyway. It should be interesting. I really, really want to push Forensic Forecast forward as far as I can. And that may include doing some live episodes and therefore a bit more participation with people who listen to the show. That would be fantastic as well. But we'll see what happens. So
yeah, could be interesting.
Yeah.
I think the other thing to point out is the redesign of the Forensic Forecast website is to give it a kind of magazine style, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So it's something that people can visit frequently, see what new articles pop up, and feel free to send things that they want added on and things that they think could be useful for other people to know about.
Well, exactly. I mean, I've got no time to really write anything. What time I do have, I use carefully. And like I said, there'll be other things popping up soon, but people don't want to read things by me all the time. I'm convinced of that. Simon doesn't even like reading my reports at work, so it just goes, you know, I'm boring. I'll admit it. But I would love for other people to send stuff in that we can publish on there. And we're not going to retain any of the rights to it. We'd just like to have more coverage for the website. So you would still retain all whatever rights, as far as we're concerned. Wouldn't matter. So
I haven't really checked, but I'm guessing the forum's still there.
Yeah, I'm thinking I might ditch that. Cause it's...
Unless we get a sudden rush of people applying to join it.
I don't see it. Prove me wrong.
There's plenty of forums out there anyway.
Prove me wrong. But I think it will be getting closed next week. One thing we could add to the website, I just thought, is Simon's Silly Story Corner.
We could do indeed.
How cool would that be? Once a week we'll stick on the stupidest story that we found that week.
Yeah.
And so, this is a brilliant segue, this. What, Simon, would you have put on this week then?
Well, if such a segment existed on the website this week, I would be putting on the robber who wore a ski mask while waiting in line at a US bank. Yes, a man went and stood in line in a bank in the US, in Ohio, in a place called Stowe. And he stood in line with mask on while he was in the line. And the cashier asked him to remove the mask. He said, well, he didn't say anything, and just continued to wait until it was his turn. Got to the front of the line and pulled out what ended up being a toy gun and demanded money. Grabbed whatever money he had and ran off, but was later found and charged with aggravated robbery. You'd think he might have had a bit more of a chance if he didn't wear the mask in the line. And if he'd have waited till he got to the front to put something on.
Well, here's a question. If you're going to rob someone, why would you wait in line for it?
Is the other thing worth pointing out about that? Why not go in with your gun in the air saying everyone on the floor? Like, I guess that the tougher bank robbers would do.
Yes. Anyway, enough of tips for criminals. I've got a story I want to share.
It's worth pointing out that we may give things that may appear to be tips to criminals, but at the end of the day, you still get caught.
Yes, indeed. I want to share a funny story as well, just because you showed it to me earlier, and I think it's quite funny. Some guy in Poland who'd been involved in an armed robbery, and while trying to avoid the law enforcement, he rolled himself up in a giant rug and propped himself up on a balcony while the police searched his relative's apartment. And he would have gotten away with it, except that after a 2-hour search, a fed-up detective walked out onto the balcony to smoke a cigarette and noticed that the carpet was trembling. Brilliant. Right, son, you're nicked. How'd they get the cuffs on him?
I'd imagine they took him out of the carpet.
Oh, okay, all right, fair enough. It would have been funnier if they'd just like put a massive big cuff around the middle of the carpet and dragged him off that way. Brilliant.
That would have been quite amusing, especially for, you know, they take pictures of you when you first get to the police station.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to put
like the board held out in front of you. If they could just have someone hold the board in front of him rolled up in carpet, that would have been quite amusing.
No need for anyone to stick a jacket over his head when he's on the way to the station. No, obviously. All right, well, I think we've used our time. I don't know if it was effectively or not, but we're trying. We want to discuss things. We want to get people on here to discuss more things. If you're free, if you've got something interesting to say, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love for you to be part of our little family at Forensic Forecast. Well, once again, visit the website, forensicforecast.com. That's forensic, the number 4. CAST.com, and have a look at what's up there. If you feel like you can contribute anything, please do so. Also, like we mentioned at the start of the show, English Git on Twitter and Schizofreud on Twitter. We're both available to follow. Simon, obviously, brand new, hasn't actually done anything yet on there. And because he's so unimpressed with things, it's unlikely he ever will. So just follow me. Just follow me. Ignore Simon, because I'm much more interesting.
Fair enough.
He doesn't have anything to write because he's so boring in the first place, but that's regardless. So, thanks for listening. Hope you had a nice time. More importantly, I hope you listen again next time. And we'll bid you adieu.
Okay. Yeah. Bye.